Next, Bathrobes Pier's broadsides, civil rights in Santa Cruz, the ongoing story. We have special guest Laura Tucker. Also, Michael Cessna may be coming in, one of the City Hall sleepers who recently suffered a very serious accident. He's going to talk about that and the kind of abusive medical care or lack thereof that he got. We're going to have a call-in report from beggar backer Becky Johnson on the Citizens Committee for the Homeless's annual Let's Get Together and Spend the People's Money meeting that they have every Thursday, fourth Thursday of every month. Their board of directors meeting was yesterday. And have a special phone-in interview from Michael Sheridan, Rolling Thunder Michael, part of the River Street Refugees, who's got a pungent and profound analysis of the paralysis here in Santa Cruz around the rights of poor people and the rights of everybody, in fact, as the economy begins its nosedive again. We have a phone interview with Catherine Byers, recorded about 5 days ago, which we have methodically prepared. It was recorded at too slow a speed. However, we speeded it up, and it's usable. So you'll be hearing that. We have some surprises as well, and we're going to begin the show with some tunes from Mark Levy, who actually was doing live playing at our benefit on Friday, benefit for the City Hall Sleepers protest, the vigil that's been going now for, 149 days? Something like that. Anyway, it's been rolling along for quite a while and continues to roll. And let's roll a little of Mark Levy. I think he's got some fun things to hear. By the way, we have a call-in number here at 96.3 FM. I suppose most of you know that who have been listening recently. I didn't. This is my first show with a call-in, and you're, of course, invited to call in. It's 427-3772 or 427-FRSC, Free Radio Santa Cruz. You can call in at any time, particularly if you have something to say about what we're discussing. That's always helpful. Again, 427-3772. We're talking about civil rights in Santa Cruz, human rights on the streets.
Last night I heard the strangest thing I never heard before. I heard that Richard Nixon put an end to the Vietnam War. I heard and saw the mighty ones, ex-presidents and such. They all got up to praise the man and thank him very much. And when his coffin came to rest, as millions watched on TV, I saw the devil wash his hands, for no one spoke for me. And the people in the cemetery filed right past his bier, in swords and guns and uniforms, to pray and shed a tear. Last night I heard the strangest thing I never heard before. I heard that Richard Nixon put an end to the Vietnam War.
Winds of change are blowing in this country I love dear. The GOP took Congress and they're moving in high gear. Their contract is full of wondrous stuff. My only hesitation is they won't go far enough. Now I think we'd all agree that welfare's getting out of hand, with teenage moms and school lunch programs bankrupting the land. But orphanages still cost too much dough.
and the tykes will be a burden when they grow. Let's have infanticide. It's been so long since it was really tried. The poor and weak ones will provide a final meal of cyanide. The savings would be justified. It's just a modest proposal to help us cut our tax. Of course, we'll wait until they're born, then kick them off our backs. Infanticide, give kids the axe. I'm sick and tired of hearing senior citizens complain that losing Medicare and Medicaid would cause them pain. Our federal budget can't pay all their bills. I think I've got a cure for all their ills. It's euthanasia. The dollar savings would amaze ya. Now there's a practice really pays ya, though it dismays ya. It worked in Asia. And we wouldn't have to worry about the dread AARP. Their voting bloc would shrink to nothing if you follow me. Euthanasia for the elderly. America's economy has slipped and we can't stop it, while labor costs and foreign competition cut our profit. It's not enough to cut the minimum wage. I found an answer from another age. Let's bring back slavery. I know it sounds a bit unsavory. Those bleeding hearts might disagree, but they cannot fail to see my bravery. The South has never been the same without the institution, and bottom line adjustments will be up with my solution. Work makes free. Try slavery. It's dangerous to walk the streets because crime is on the rise, but building lots more prisons is a losing enterprise. Alabama brought the chain gang back, but overcrowded prisons need a new plan of attack. We need firing squads, much more effective than those cattle prods. There can't be doubt it will increase the odds. Hesitant prison guards will get to use their rods. And if we need more space, we can appropriate Indian reservation lands. Stem prison overflow by turning all of those into concentration camps and use those firing squads, the ultimate in gun control. I have some other good ideas, but I've gone on too long. So if you think of one yourself, just add it to the song. Soon you'll find we'll have it all our way, for there'll be no one left we have to pay. Yes, we'll have the whole world for our own, as long as I can hold this microphone. That's our broadcast for this evening. Stay tuned, America. Good night.
When I was just a buckaroo, I came to Laramie. I met up with some hippies at the university. They offered me some loco weed, and when we all got high, we chanted in a circle with our palms turned toward the sky. Now I'm homing in Wyoming, this old cowboy can't complain, where the pioneers went roaming and the Cheyenne danced for rain. When the man said, do your own thing, I went heading for the Buttes. Now I'm homing in Wyoming at the Oga Institute. Once I was a wrangler amidst the antelope. The only hemp I heard about was braided into rope. Till I joined up with those hippie freaks and took the token dope. Now my rustling days are over, this all-rounder just said nope. Cause now I'm homing in Wyoming, this old cowboy can't complain, pioneers went roaming, and the Cheyenne danced Lorraine. When the man said, do your own thing, I went heading for the Butte. Now I'm oming in Wyoming at the Ogun Institute. I punched a lot of cattle and I rode the rodeo. Rambling through the sagebrush covered fast as I would go. Now it's honey crunch granola and a hippie tie-dye-o. And oming in Wyoming is the only life I know. Yes, I've forsaken whiskey and gambling in saloons. No more wayward women in their white lace pantaloons. For I'd rather sit in silence or chant the names of God and bliss out in the next life than rot beneath the sod. So I'm oming in Wyoming. This old cowboy can't complain. Where the pioneers went roaming and the Cheyenne danced for rain. When the man said, do your own thing, I went heading for the Butte. Now I'm oming in Wyoming at the Ogun Institute. I've hung up my branding iron and let my horse go free. There's a peace pipe in my gun rack where my rifle used to be. Now I grow organic gardens on this green acre of ground with compost from the cattle that I used to herd around. I gave away my wide-brimmed hat, likewise my cowboy boots, 'cause now I'm walking barefoot and carving bamboo flutes. So if you hear me holler, please don't think it's strange that I'm high atop a mesa singing home, home on the range. Homing in Wyoming, this old cowboy can't complain. Where the pioneers went roaming and the Cheyenne danced for rain. When the man said, do your own thing, I went heading for the Butte. Now I'm oming in Wyoming at the Ogun Institute. No longer stuck in Maya, I've reached a higher plane. Praising Mother Gaia with nothing left to gain. So if you wanna join me and be my loving pal, come practice up your prana in the desert chaparral. And we'll be oming in Wyoming. This old cowboy can't complain. Where the pioneers went roaming and the Cheyenne danced for rain. When the man said, do your own thing, I went heading for the Butte. Now I'm oming in Wyoming at the Ogun Institute. Yes, I'm oming in Wyoming.
And that was Mark Levy from his new album, Born to be Wired, which you can actually buy. He's a local guy. He's up in Big Basin, as I mentioned last show. He's a great singer. He's one of the few political topical singers still hanging out, still doing new stuff, at least that I like. I like Dave Lippmann, too, although I prefer Mark. I think Mark's lyrics are cleverer, as you may have noticed. We had three songs here. One was The Strangest Thing. The second was Clearing the Air, and the third was Oming in Wyoming. And Clearing the Air, which has lots of internal rhyming and sort of the Gingrich song, I think has a lot of, it owes a lot to Tom Lehrer. Those of you may know Tom Lehrer, Poisoning Pigeons in the Park, The Masochism Tango, all kinds of songs from the late 50s and 60s. Lehrer hasn't been writing for 20 or 30 years. He's a professor of mathematics, or was, at University of California at Santa Cruz. But Mark Levy has picked up the flame and is doing that Olympic singing number. And now we're going to try to get some singing from our guest. Sign in there, Laura. How you doing?
Hi.
Laura, you're an old-time homeless activist, in the sense that I guess we first met when all of us were serving soup illegally at the town clock in 1989.
Uh-huh. Yep.
You remember those days at all? I mean, did any memories come back to you from what was happening back then?
I don't know.
I don't think you ever served soup yourself, but you were on the computer.
I was a cooker. I cooked the soup and helped deliver it in my car.
Did you ever get hassled by the cops for doing that, or were you worried about that at that time?
Well, it was kind of fun dodging the cops, but I never got caught, so.
How long did you do that for?
Not too long. I think I just did a couple of batches of soup and a couple of deliveries and let you work on the computer at the house a little bit. So
yeah, I remember that. I was running from couch to couch and room to room in 1989, and you were, I had no computer that I could use, and so you volunteered to use yours. You and Jim, I guess.
Yeah.
Volunteering your computer, and my thanks to both of you for that time. And then I ran into you in University Copy, and you had a number of stories I thought would be local stories, recent stories, recent, you might say, even exposés, you know, information that would be of interest to folks who may find themselves in a similar situation or forced to go through the same kinds of bureaucratic ruts you went through.
Uh-huh.
You initially, I guess, we began talking about the mobile home situation. Tell us a little bit about that.
Okay. Well, first I would advise nobody to buy a mobile home that's too old, because what they're doing in my mobile home park is Live Oak Mobile Home Park. Especially don't buy one there. Well, actually, anyhow, they're not allowing us to sell the old mobile homes on site, so I bought mine for $25,000, and now it's worth nothing, and I've tried to give it away even, and since there's nowhere to put mobile homes, there's no spaces available really in Santa Cruz. I was 2 months late with my rent and was given a 3-day notice.
How long had you lived there?
I've been there 4 years now.
So you're an old-time tenant.
Yeah, pretty old-time.
Have you often been late with your rent? Or?
No, I haven't. These are new landlords that are pretty Napoleonic, as my neighbors have called them, but and it's not just me. Everybody with an old mobile home there is now stuck there. It's kind of like the old company store type situation now, because no one can sell their mobile home, and yet they still have to pay rent on the space every month. There's a couple there that just got married. They have two mobile homes, which they're going to have to pay for both. They can't move in. I mean, they can move in together, but they have to pay for both mobile homes because they can't sell them. They're too old. And
how many people does this affect, would you say? How many people are in the trailer park, first of all?
I don't know the count. I would guess there's probably about, let's see, maybe 40 of us.
And how many people are in a position where they want to sell their homes, or in some way they're being harassed by the management?
There's several of them that are being harassed by the management, and in more ways than that. The first run-in I had with them was I had planted wildflowers in my front yard, which are very difficult to plant, to transplant wildflowers, and they said that they were going to spray weed killer on everybody's yard, and I asked them not to.
Methylbromide or
some kind of poisonous thing, and mm-hmm. they had said they weren't going to and did it anyway, and I complained, and they threatened to evict me. So that was the first run-in I had.
Did you complain
them.
To them, or did you complain to the health department or some other authorities?
I complained to them.
Mm-hmm. Maybe time to go to the health department, right?
Yeah. Well, I think it was legal, whatever they were spraying. Not that it was good for the earth or anything, but... Mm-hmm. Anyway, so And other people have been harassed in different ways. There's a guy there that they changed his property line because they want him out, so now his mobile home has to be is too big for the property that he's renting. But then, of course, he can't sell it. So, and what happens when you can't sell it is eventually, like I'm being evicted, they're going to pull it and charge me for pulling the mobile home, plus $186 an hour lawyer's fees, and they can charge treble damages. So luckily, there's no renters. Or debtor's prison. That's been my mantra for the last couple of months.
Newt Gingrich has his way. Who knows?
Yeah.
Or whoever. Actually, there's state stuff happening too. Actually, no. I know of no initiatives to reestablish debtor's prison. Although it's true, for example, Although, and locally, we did have a situation where Red Top Robert Flory, the homeless activist, was able to avoid paying camping tickets and other harassment citations from police that he had acquired in his years of protest back in the early 90s by simply saying, I won't pay any of these fines and I won't do any of this community service and you can't send me to jail because these are infractions, but what I will do is I will allow you to, the city can civilly sue me for any, you know, resources I have, which amount to my toothbrush and my backpack, and, the sleeping bag, it provided the police haven't taken the latest one, you know, that sort of thing. So that unfortunately changed, although I think it's still a defense that some people are considering using. We have like 200 and, what is it, 50 or 60 odd sleeping ban tickets that are hitting the courts next month at the City Hall Sleepers protest. And of course, there are always tickets hitting the courts, usually four or five a week, just from the rambunctious activities of our Parks and Rec Rangers on horseback who enjoy roaming the Pogonip and keeping it free of human debris.
Which is something that I'm going to have to worry about now since I'm going to be homeless, or not homeless, actually I prefer to say vanful. But
you're
how
thankful
much...
thankful that you're vanful, I'm sorry.
Yes, thankful that I'm vanful. How much is a ticket, though, I'm curious?
Well, if you want to pay the bail on the ticket and so avoid court, and I don't know of anybody who ever has, actually I know one person who has, and actually that recently, but not that city ticket, a county camping ticket. It's $162 for a city sleeping ban ticket under Municipal Code 6.36, which is the city sleeping ban. Usually what people do, don't have money, is they go to court, first disqualify Mulligan, or Meat Grinder Mulligan as we call him, the the referee of courtroom, used to be courtroom E, I guess now it's got a number, and it's in the basement of the county building. It's the only courtroom in that building. You want it transferred to another court, and it is $162.
Wow.
So anyway, but let's get back to your van situation. You've lived there 4 years. You got together $25,000 through your large cocaine operation.
Actually, my evil grandmother.
Oh, your evil grandmother. That's even worse. I mean, cocaine is one thing, but grandmothers
can be really dangerous.
They can really get you. Milk and cookies. You never know where that leads. So you have had this van for 4 years, and then the Live Oak. What's it called?
The mobile home for 4 years, yeah.
Right, but what is the park called?
It's called the Live Oak Mobile Home Park.
And where is it?
It's on the corner of 17th and Brommer.
17th and Brommer. You know, I think I lived in that park, as a matter of fact.
Wow.
I was actually probably there when you were. I lived there for 3 months in 1994 in a van owned by Patricia Ann and George.
Huh.
I don't know if you know them. They're Patricia Ann was a woman whose hair was non-existent. She kind of shaved her head. She was a fuzzy-headed woman who she let me use her trailer for that period of time. And I lived there just sort of until that somebody bought the trailer.
Uh-huh.
And I had to go. It wasn't my trailer. It was just, you know, kind of a long rental.
I wish I'd known you were there.
Yay. Oh. It would have been fun. I wasn't doing a radio show. This free radio is, of course, about a year and a half old. But, yeah, I remember Patricia Ann had sort of some... She wasn't that critical of the management, but you say the management changed.
Yeah, it was owned by Al Yee, and then has just been bought by the Cabrals, Manuel and Margaret Cabral. And so they're the ones that have said that they're not going to let anybody sell their mobile home, which I actually don't know if that's legal or not. I don't know too much about the law, but they're telling me that they have the legal right to not let me sell.
Have they told you this verbally, or they said this in print? Have they given you a written letter?
Their lawyers have sent me in print. They told me verbally when I actually came up with the rent money, and they refused it. So I had all of the back rent to pay, and a roommate that was able to help me pay in the future. And, you know, friends and family helping. And so I was there was really no reason for them to, you know, not reestablish my tenancy there. And I'm not sure why, you know, I don't know if it's personal, if they didn't want me there, if I was just like the forerunner. Because if they can do it to me, then it sets a precedent for the park, and they can do it to everybody else, which is also why they really want to fight this case. If I win, then everyone else is going, you know, unless they have a really good reason, then they're going to have to let everyone else also sell their mobile homes.
So you do have a case in the courts right now?
Yeah. I go to court on the 8th of August.
And what court and what time is that?
It's 9 o'clock in E, I believe.
Oh, no. Get it out of there.
Really?
Yeah, if you're talking about that's Mulligan's. Is it an infraction ticket we're talking about? Or?
It's, well, an unlawful detainer, whatever the heck that is. And then that's, I filed a response, and I'm representing myself, although I have a legal aid lawyer helping me. Mm-hmm. And the woman who wants to buy the mobile home for the price of the back rent, so I'm actually not getting any money at all for this, mm-hmm. other than I won't be in debt if I win. She has a lawyer, which is Mark Casey. I think he's has, you know, a mobile home. He knows a lot about mobile home law.
She being the person that's helping you, or
the woman that's buying it.
And so she's your ally in this matter?
Yes, she's my ally. Although, is, you know, if she gets, she's getting the mobile home for a really good deal. Mm-hmm. But you know, without her, I have no case at all. In which case, they would pull the mobile home, charge me for pulling it, about $2,000 plus all the lawyer's fees, and I don't know if they would be so bold as to charge me treble damages, but they can if they
this
would.
This is August
8th.
8th at 9 a.m. In courtroom.
E, I think, but it's on my refrigerator. I can let you know.
You phone it in to me. I'll kind of pass on the word at the next show for those who are interested in following this case, which is coming up pretty soon. That's about a week and a half down the road, something like that.
Yeah, and I can't wait till it's over.
Yeah, I believe it. Actually, that which brings me, well, before we leave this subject, I want to talk to you about the effects this has had on you personally. But also, it seems to me that if you offered to pay your rent and you haven't engaged in any violations of the rules...
Right, none.
Are they in a position where they can simply evict you at will? I mean, is that the law?
Well, since I wasn't able to pay rent within 3 days, which is, you know... 3 days note anyway. Yeah, I wasn't able to pay anything within 3 days, they have a right to do that.
What has legal aid told you? That is there any way you can tie this up in court for a while? I've often heard that in, for example, ordinary tenant-landlord disputes, they're sometimes resolved because tenants, even though their fundamental rights are nearly absent in most California cities, perhaps all now that the state has passed a law kind of usurping rent control in those few cities where it's passed, but nonetheless, in spite of the fact you don't have any long-term legal rights, you can somehow tie it up for 3 or 4 months, and that is often enough of a threat to get the landlord to dicker with you to get you out. Did you have that option as a mobile...
Well, it's actually been tied up for a while, because it took them a while to serve me the papers, it's taken the legal wheels haven't been moving all that quickly, so it has been tied up, and I was really surprised that they didn't take the back rent, because I'm sure it's costing them a pretty penny, but they have plenty of money in all kinds of different, I'm not the only one probably that's going to court with them. The woman that's buying the mobile home from me has fought her lawyers before and won in court, so I've got a pretty good ally there. I really don't know how good of a case I have, and if I did have still the back rent, I spent the back rent money because I have no income at all right now and no job, and have been really depressed and agoraphobic and not answering my door or my telephone and crying a lot.
Talking on Free Radio Santa Cruz, yes. I'd like to point out right here.
Yes. Well, I am also now on Zoloft now.
What is
Zoloft?
Right.
Zoloft is on an antidepressant
drug.
Yeah, which is what's allowing me probably to be, you know,
verbal.
Out and verbal, really.
And is this so, are you a long-term person with a diagnosis by a mental health institution, or is this a new thing for you?
Well, doctors in white suits give me the willies, and so I've always gone to acupuncturists and alternative medicine, but my depression runs in the family. My grandmother's been on antidepressants probably for most of her life, and it didn't really hit me probably until recently. I've had a pretty stressful life, but... you know, I've never experienced this before, and I didn't seek any help really until I went to a county just recently.
Tell us that sad story. You kind of described that for me. I think this is interesting. You know, there are some who would say that you weren't depressed, but that you were, you know, essentially in shock.
I was in shock
and hurt by objective activities that were, you know, impacting you. It wasn't sort of like some internal chemical imbalance or some, you know, genetic defect.
Well, it could be. Actually, it could be hormonal or something, because I could be in the grocery store without any thought of what was wrong with my life and start crying and have to leave. I used to go to school and
drive them out of town initiative came, and those machines are particularly nasty because it's not just panhandlers that get harassed. Anybody sitting 50 feet from a change-making machine is illegal, and those tickets are going to court. You may have thought that law was thrown out in 1994. No. An earlier version of the law was thrown out by the courts, and immediately Kennedy and Rotkin and the city council, including Byers, rolled right in and passed another sit-on-the-sidewalk law, which is currently our law. And I talked to a man who got a ticket for that a month ago, and he actually had to plead guilty to it, or he did plead guilty to it, because he was criminally sitting less than, you know, 50 feet from a change-making machine. So, yeah. Or was it 10 feet from a shop?
Well, yeah, or near a glass front of a place like a Woolworths. Supposedly that's against the law, too. Well, I think I'm going to be, safe when it comes to approaching the university students with the issues that Mike Rotkin fails on. I am actually going to try to avoid it being a, you know, clash of personalities, because Mike Rotkin can be very, very vicious, and I am a Gandhian socialist. I am Gandhian. I've read most of the 53 volumes that Gandhi has written. I don't know if Scott Kennedy could say the same thing, but I'm not running. Scott Kennedy's not running this time. Mike Rotkin, when I was speaking last week to try to save the Redwoods at the lime kilns, after I had said my piece and referred to, you know, when you're in these stymied kind of decisions, you know, both, you know, there's reasonable men can disagree on both sides, that you go to the elders, or in other words, you ask yourself, what would the indigenous people have done? And Mike Rotkin comes back after all the public testimony is through, and he has his time, and he starts speaking that he doesn't want this decision based on airy fairy spiritualism, and and as far as he knows, the Ohlone Indians burn the Poganip once a year. Well, that's brush clearing. That's not sawing down redwood trees. He even said, I don't know what the elders would have done if they had chainsaws. I think that kind of disrespect for the sacredness of the redwoods and the sacredness of memory of the Ohlone people is the kind of thing that he'll be revealing himself to the students, and I think the students will pick up on it. So I intend to drive the issues that will let Mike Rotkin hang himself. So I don't want to be attacking him. It sounds like I attacked him just now, but I'm telling on
Uncle
him.
Mike attacked
I'm telling on him. You know, he's not going to get away with those kind of remarks without me repeating them. And if you don't believe me, you know, ask Sam Farr. So I want to try to have a good issues oriented forum. So the forums are always based on issues. The situation back then when Scott Kennedy was running is different. I am on the SCAN steering committee. I'm supposed to be the green upstart there. Somehow I got on there, and I've been watchdogging it now for more than a year. We've changed the rules so that people can't walk in and register and then vote. Scott Kennedy held a big rally of the socialist socialites, what he would call it, the progressive elite, and walked the rally over to the meeting. And that had something to do with getting the scan endorsement. And when you have the scan endorsement in this town, that pretty much determines whether or not you're going to win. I'm trying to build a campaign from the precinct level up. If I get the scan endorsement, that's going to be great. And there is a possibility of me actually getting the scan endorsement this time because we have a lot more Greens in scan. We have a lot more labor in scan. And I believe I have support of Democratic labor and support of the Greens pretty solidly. So it's a different ball game this time, and things have been slow in moving, shifting the balance in some of these stodgy progressive organizations. But I think the balance has shifted, and I think that those, like Cynthia Matthews, has a strong support of women and people that are very much